Fred Film Radio from the 76th Venice International Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti. I'm with Angelo Acerbi.
Hello.
And we are at our fourth and last roundtable of this year. We've been hosting, for those who have listened to our roundtables, this is the fourth of three roundtables where we try to discuss the hot topics of film festival and the whole film industry. We started with Italian directors of foreign festivals. We talked to the most important artistic directors of international festivals. Then we talked about gender equality, and then we are finally closing the round tables with another hot topic: diversity in general in film industry and film festivals. I would like to ask our guests of today to introduce themselves and to tell us more about them before starting the discussion. Who wants to start?
We start from this side.
Let's start.
So pick your mic.
Okay.
You introduce yourself.
And in Spanish. Yes? Hola,
no. Well, if you can in English, if you can in English, it's better.
Okay, I'm Sebastián Muñoz, director for the film The Prince. I'm from Chile. It's my first film.
Okay. As an introduction, it works.
My name is Michel Rayac, and I'm the co-curator of Venice VR, the official virtual reality competition of the Mostra.
My name is Isabel Sandoval. I'm a writer-director, and I'm here in Venice for my third fiction feature, Lingua Franca, which is part of Giornate degli Autori.
And last but not least,
I'm Brian Robinson. I'm a freelance programmer for the BFI Flair London LGBTQ Plus Film Festival, and I'm here in Venice on the Queer Lion jury.
Well, welcome to everybody. As Chiara said, this is the topic of this roundtable is the diversity, and you are all involved in festivals in a way or the other. I would like to throw this question: if, on your opinion, festivals around the world treat diversity in the right way and in enough quantity, if I can say so. So I would like Brian to answer first, to start the discussion, because you are the most involved as a festival select programmer.
Well, I've also been a member of an audience too for many years, and I think that diversity is kind of underrated, and also that the people who control things are usually fat, middle-aged white men who all know each other and are very comfortable. And actually, there are many other stories that need to be told. And if people say, oh, it's very difficult, it's because they're not looking. The stories are there, and there are ways of getting people in. And if you want to find diverse stories, you will find them. 33 or more years ago, when the London Lesbian and Gay Film Festival started, Gus Van Sant was a very minor experimental filmmaker. Pedro Almodovar had made a few experimental features and hadn't really been a great success. And so I think that shows that things have changed, that certainly gay male filmmakers have it a little bit easier, but it's still not the easiest thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's instructive to look at a festival like Berlin, the Panorama, which was run by two gay men for a long time, and it has made it a speciality of finding queer and diverse stories. We've got Isabel Sandoval here, who is a representative of a trans director with a trans film, and I think, unless I've missed something in the VR section, that Isabel's film is the only film that I've seen with a trans character in the whole of the festival, which I think definitely tells us something about where we are in Venice with diversity is that it's true that within the selection that we have of films for the Queer Lion, that we do have a range of lesbian or queer or gay male activity to look at. Certainly there's some bisexuals too, but the trans is missing. And there was a big, important moment, I think, in the international festival circuit when the film O Phantasma was screened in Venice. And it was a big shock because here was something very queer, perverse, fetishy, that was in an A-list festival. And I think that that was a very good thing, but that, that we need more shocks like that to the system. And we can't just have endless Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. You know, even if it's Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, it's great, but there are many more stories than the heteronormative going on.
Michel, how is the diversity issue treated or considered in the VR world?
Absolutely, definitely. A couple of days ago, we had a panel in which a black woman artist really challenged us by saying the gay black women are underrepresented, and it sparked a whole discussion around this. And it really made me think, as a curator for the selection in VR, about what was our definition of, I mean, the basic definition of why we were selecting films. And the easy answer to that is always to say, well, we take the best films. Mm-hmm. We always strive to look for the best films. But it really challenged me in defining what is best. And if you really look into it, you realize that this notion of finding the best films is very subjective. And therefore, what I've observed is that when we do our work looking for new talent or best films, we tend to use the horizon that we already have around us. And we use our networks, we travel to festivals, we travel to studios, and we see. But I realized that there's so much talent that is not discovered because it lies beyond the horizons of our you know, connections, of our personal also connections, that I thought this is really, really interesting, because there is no excuse to not have close to equal representation of women towards men, but there's no excuse to not look at more transgender films, but gay and lesbian films within the context of the general selection. It's a question of just breaking the boundaries, the limitations of what I call our horizon, and just try and tap into new, really new circles, new sources. And I'm always in VR. It's a very, very new community. It still is quite a small community compared to film. But I'm so amazed every time we do the selection for Venice VR, the discoveries that we make. Like, I'm thinking of a film called Daughters of Chibok, which is comes from Nigeria, made by someone that has been under the radar, Joel Benson. And there are many, many people like that that we're finding in this community, even though it's still a very small community. So forcing ourselves as curators to not be satisfied with the confines of the circles of connections that we have is absolutely an obligation today, I think.
So it's not that you're lazy, that you don't have time enough to look for...
I don't think it's connected with being lazy, you know, being satisfied with the circles you sort of control. It's a question of really taking a chance and you know, thinking out of the box and really going beyond what you think is new but is actually safe.
I was thinking, but looking at Sebastian, that in terms of representation, maybe it's just a case, like it's not, it just happened. But when I think about Chilean directors and Chilean films, there are they're very representative of their...
Of any. The,
well, of any, yes, thank you.
Any potential.
So, obviously, do you agree with my feeling there that Chile is more open to represent everybody, you know, in the right way? What do you think? ¿Qué piensas?
¿Qué pienso sobre? Ahí me acuerdo nada.
Sí, que he visto que vimos que más o menos, no quiero decir todas las películas que vienen de Chile, pero los mejores directores, incluido incluida sí. tu película, representan a todas las diversidades. Y cuando pienso a los mejores, a las mejores películas de Chile ahora, pienso a personas gay, lesbianas, trans, todas están, fueron representadas, hasta los Oscar. Entonces, es algo que... ¿Qué situación hay en Chile? ¿Cómo trabajáis en este sentido?
¿Puedo hablar en español para poder...?
¿Sí?
¿Sí?
Intentamos. Yo traducirlo, sí.
Gracias. Bueno, Chile es un país de poetas.
Country of poets.
Gabriel Mistral, Pablo Neruda, y mi país es un país que está como encerrado entre montañas y el mar, muy conservador.
And my country is very close between mountains and the sea, and it's muy conservative. It's very conservative.
Yeah.
Sorry, from Spanish to English difference.
Y yo he tenido la suerte.
And he was lucky enough.
O mi destino.
Or it was his destiny.
Yes. Es hablar desde el ser humano común y corriente.
To talk about the human being as.
Común y corriente, el ser humano común y corriente, the simple man.
Okay, the simple man, yes.
Yo no me siento gay o yo no me siento representando como un solo espacio de la vida.
I don't think I'm representing just one space of life, so I don't think myself about myself as only gay.
Yo solamente hablo desde mi mirada política.
I just talk about my political ideas.
My vision.
Desde
mi corazón y.
From my heart.
Y yo nunca me he sentido diferente.
I never felt different.
Y eso siento que es lo que hace que mi propuesta visual.
I think that makes my vision.
Tenga también esa crudeza o esa por primera vez en Latinoamérica mostrar a hombres.
To be so real and that makes me portray men.
Con desnudo frontal.
Okay, naked. Okay, full frontal.
Okay.
Full frontal. Porque
en el cine siempre la mujer ha sido el objeto del deseo.
Because in the movies there's always been the woman who was the object of desire.
Entonces mi historia es una historia común y corriente, que la particularidad que tiene es que son hombres encerrados en una cárcel.
The peculiarity of my story is that it's men closed in a prison, in jail.
Okay.
Y el ser humano siempre va a buscar los afectos más allá del género.
And the human being is always looking for connection, for love besides gender.
And I want to ask to Isabel, as Brian before just tell us. Told us that, you know, the film community and the festivals and people, all the sides are those big fat white men. They don't just talk with other big fat white men. And you are writer, producer, and director. You're a trans woman. So how was your life in the movie business? How was it? How easy or not easy?
I feel like I'm in a very interesting position because although I'm trans and, you know, this is a trans film with a trans character, I've also done two feature films before, but that was before I transitioned. Mm-hmm. And my first two features premiered in Locarno, Busan, Göteborg, Vancouver. And I think as a trans immigrant, Filipino trans immigrant filmmaker in the United States, the current political climate is both very interesting and can be very challenging because, you know, as a kind of minorities, you know, it can be tough to feel really brave and empowered to speak openly and freely about your experience, given that, you know, the current president and administration has been showing tendencies of, you know, curbing that freedom of expression. But I feel like at the same time, it's also a very fertile and also very the most exciting moment to really be a true artist when you're up against all these restrictions and potential oppression. I feel that art is at its most daring and vibrant and most powerful when you're up against, you know, the most adverse challenges and opposition.
And how do you think that your community is represented in the movie business industry all over?
I feel like at least in the US there is, and also with London where Lingua Franca will be competing next, there is a conscious effort and initiative among programmers, among festival directors to really, you know, make a genuine effort to represent diverse directors, whether in terms of women directors, directors of color, LGBTQ directors. So I do notice that, and it's very concrete, which is different from actually what is happening in Hollywood, you know, the movie business, because it is still overwhelmingly controlled by, as Brian said, you know, cisgendered white men. And if I were to make the Philippine movie industry an example, it's very interesting in that a lot of the big, you know, movies that get greenlighted are romantic comedies or dramas, and they do very well in the box office in the Philippines. And it's because the two major studios in the Philippines are led by women.
Oh, really?
And it really matters, you know, who makes the decisions and who greenlights projects, because, you know, that will determine the kind of projects that actually get produced and get made.
So this, Brian, is exactly what you said. You know, if the right persons are in command, the right decisions are made.
I think it's very instructive to look back to the Sundance Film Festival in, I think it was 1991. I wasn't there, but a lot of people have written about it, the moment of the discovery, in inverted commas, of new queer cinema. And there were people like Christine Vachon was there, Wash West and Richard Glatzer, Bruce LaBruce, and they'd all made a few films. Greg Araki was there. And everyone thought, this is a new dawn. We're on the cusp of greatness. There was a whole rush of distributors wanting to buy the films. The sad thing is that not many of those films made very much money. And it's only the next generation, when a film like Carol is triumphing in award ceremonies and at box offices, that I think it's that generation of the 90s is now in power, and they're very different to the people that went before, or they're getting to places of power. And so at a time, say, in the 70s or 80s or 90s, when you would go to pitch a story, if the people you were talking to didn't understand your story, didn't care about it, and imagined that the only thing audiences wanted to see were happy family entertainments or boys falling in love with girls and a happy or unhappy ending. But there's so much more to life and drama than that. And I think we mustn't forget that people do have to make money. But if a film is good, then if it's marketed properly, if you reach out to the right audiences, people will come to see it. I mean, A Fantastic Woman is a film which I'm sure most British production companies would have said, who's the audience? Who cares? No one will come to see it. But actually, that's not true. And I think that you've got to persuade the marketing department and everyone who works on a film to get behind it. And a friend of mine was a DVD marketeer, and he said in the early years of the 21st century, if you put the word gay on a DVD cover, you would sell half the copies, because a lot of the customers were scared to have anything with the word gay in their house. They weren't out, or they were embarrassed by who would see it. And so something like the marketing campaign for Brokeback Mountain, where they were at such pains to almost deny that it was a gay film, that it's universal and it's just for everyone, so we'll just throw it out there. But as a film programmer, it breaks my heart when I know there's an audience that we could bring to a film, when distributors say, no, we don't want to pigeonhole it. We don't want it. It's as if putting it in a queer festival is like putting the mark of Cain on it, or exposing an audience to kryptonite, that it will kind of destroy. Whereas I feel that we can, through good word of mouth and publicity, really be a platform that didn't exist in previous generations, and there are people who are hungry for all kinds of films. And actually, trans films are something that it's not. Trans people are not the only people who want to see trans films, and just like queer people can see Romeo and Juliet and appreciate it, so Mr. and Mrs. Straight can watch films about queers and lesbians and bisexuals and understand that they're human beings.
Well, you raised tons of issues here, because there is like money versus independency once, and the fact that you can actually reach an audience that has more, that is more open-minded than what you think, or than what producers think. But Chiara, we were talking earlier about
a
question that you have about perceptions of what you see and what you watch. So,
I mean, I read some article. I was writing an article some months ago, and about, you know, transgender representation films, and I read that. For example, the transgender community reacted back to films like Girl, for example, because it wasn't actually played, the role of the girl wasn't actually portrayed by a trans actress. So my question is, like, even when the transgender community is represented, is it always represented in the right way?
And this,
I mean, are we watching exactly what it feels like to be transitioning in the case of girl, or, you know, are we watching what's real, or are we watching like romanticized or dramatized version of reality?
And
yes,
I think
we're talking
this,
about cinema, yes, but still.
That this question applies also not only to trans, but
yes,
to gays, or to bias, or to any kind of, any, let's call it minority that is not largely and normally represented in
and
cinema.
Known and by people,
known
because
by
the
people,
problem
yeah.
sometimes is that you don't know transgender people, you don't know gay
example,
people. Like, well,
the Danish Girl is another example. You know, Danish Girl was a huge success, but it was very ostracized by the by the LGBT community. So it's, what do you think? Whoever wants to talk.
I think, you know, like I said, the current time is particularly sensitive, because, you know, the community, like the trans community, is facing a lot of discrimination and also prejudice, you know, especially in the last few months in the US. And understandably, there's a level, you know, of protectiveness about the accuracy and the truth of how represented, but on this, in the same manner, I haven't seen Girl, you know. Yeah. But I know, I do know that in the U.S. American press, it's gotten a lot of negative reviews and also negative press. I think about the ending and also the fact that, one, it was portrayed by a trans actress. I think it's a gray area, I think, because I know that in Girl, from what I've read, this is someone who is still in the process of transitioning.
Yes.
But then I think in general, like, for example, I think the big controversy was Scarlett Johansson was trying to play a transgender man. Now, that is something...
And she dropped it, I guess.
She did drop it after a lot of social pressure, public pressure. I think because trans actors are only now getting to have trans characters represented on the screen, it's very important, not just in terms of representation, but also economically, to give them jobs, because they're already not able to play straight or cisgender characters. You know, are we still, then in that sense, are we trying to rob their opportunity to actually play the one type of character they could actually play, you know, honestly and authentically? And so I don't have like a black and white position in that one, but because I do feel that cinema and all art is about empathy and imagination, you know, and especially for a certain community that hasn't, you know, if there is a trans movie that doesn't happen to be directed by a trans director, or a gay movie not directed by a gay director like Brokeback Mountain, as long as it does, you know, make an effort, I feel, to really represent the humanity and the dignity of those characters, there is something admirable in that attempt. And I don't think we should necessarily demonize that, but, you know, to learn from that and to actually give access and resources to members of those minority communities to tell their narratives themselves.
I have to say that it was refreshing for me, for example, to watch something like some episodes of Grey's Anatomy and see a trans actor being simply a character in the film without them focusing on the fact that he was a trans person. I mean, that was refreshing, because it's nice to see, and it's interesting, and it's to see stories about transition, but at the same time to equal everything, to feel that everything is normal. It's the best thing would be to see everybody in our, you know, in a story, just that, a story about people, and not, you know,
we could open a huge big door on the concept of normal, but I don't want to do that.
That's the thing. There's nothing normal.
I'm a great fan of Girl. I think this film is totally incredible, and it makes me very upset when there's a confusion between the art of acting and the recognition that even a trans character can be portrayed by someone who's incredibly believable through her work in this film. And I don't understand how people can be upset about that, because it's not about promoting. The film is doing a lot for trans identity, I think. It's a very, very touching film. The same way that you, Isabel, you mentioned Brokeback Mountain, and I think that Brokeback Mountain did a lot for the gay community, or at least for the general public, to become more open-minded and accepting about a same-sex love story. And it doesn't matter whether the actors were gay or straight. personally. I think they did an amazing job. The film was a huge success and did a lot for the acceptance of same-sex love stories. And I think Girl does the same. The performance of the young actor is just mind-blowing, and I think he's incredibly believable, and he's not. There's nothing in his performance nor in the story that I feel does any kind of damage. Actually, it does a lot of good to the same thing that Brokeback Mountain did in accepting and understanding the journey that one needs to go through facing his or her own identity. So I don't understand. I don't understand the negative criticism against this film because the actor or the actress was not yet a fully transitioned trans actor. I really don't understand it. And it makes me upset for the lack of respect for the work of an actor or an actress. Mm. Scarlett Johansson and the thing is a different thing because it's really completely different problem.
Different, yeah.
Plus, in Girl, he was transitioning, so it makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah.
I think one of the things I disliked about Girl, although I do think it's an incredibly powerful film, is there was no sense of there being anyone other than the lead protagonist in the trans community. There was no sense of a trans community. It was just, I'm alone, I have medical intervention, counselling, I'm at school. I mean, if you're living in Holland, there's got to be, however small the village you're in, you know, there is the internet. You could reach out. You'd find something. I mean, there've been trans people at the Oscars. You know, the world that just ignores trans issues has long ago passed, one hopes. But
besides this analysis on Girl, we all agree, I think, that talking about those issues is important. Because the more you talk, the more you make general public aware of the existence of the actual real form of this reality. Because as you said earlier, Brian, the movie industry is an industry. So you have to please your audience, you have to gain more audience. So if you manage to reach another kind of audience or bring in to a certain kind of movies the audience you already have, is an additional money coming in, basically. So I agree a little. I agree with Michel when he says that those two films in their own different ways made a lot about the two communities because they made those communities visible and existing to my aunt or my 85-year-old mom or, you know, people that really didn't have the slightest idea of the possibility of those were to exist. Then we can analyze the pros and cons of the way the films are made, and we can discuss for hours about that. But I think that what we wanted to talk here today was exactly this. So how much those diversities are represented in movies and if this quantity is enough or not, or how we can make it bigger and larger and more visible and more, you know, productive, if we can.
You're touching on the issue of quotas, which is really a tricky one.
I was not suggesting quotas. I was just hoping
I know, but it's touching on this issue. And when you try to analyze, like every time the selection of a festival like Venice comes out, everyone's going to start calculating how many women, how many men, you know, all of that, how many black people, etc. And it is fair to do that because it's how you can push an agenda, you can promote something. At the same time, it's a very, very tricky one because at the same time, it becomes artificial. You know, I know that when we do the selection for Venice VR, the minute that we get all the submissions that we have, we put them in an Excel sheet, and we have a column for those films that are made by women and one that are made by men, for instance. And then we look at the countries, how many black people, how many, you know, people maybe with a handicap maybe, or maybe gay people, and so it becomes weird to have this list and you keep looking at it and checking while you're looking at the work, and you know you need to do that, but it's a constant dialogue between
the battle also.
Yes, yes. And I don't have the full answer. The exercise needs to happen, but there is a fundamental contradiction between the approach with quota and the attempt to understand a film for its content and its message. The content and the message is never separated from who is sending it and the context in which it's been done. But I just want to say that it's not as easy as it sounds to say there should be more trans films. Mm-hmm. It depends where and when, I think. And I think the visibility of trans artists needs to be addressed and needs to be pushed, definitely. But it's not easy to do it in all formats and in all events. I'm just saying there's a tension in that dialogue between agendas of a community and the international representation, of a festival like Venice, for instance.
Well, you're totally right, and I agree 100%, because I was used to work for a festival in the U.S. where there was this devastating sheet where we have to tick all the kind of, so how many Latinos movie, how many Filipino, how many Chinese, how many, because you have to give everything to everybody. And sometimes you were selecting films, and still happens that you select films that you leave out films that are very good, but you already reached the quota of that specific area, so you're done, which is really stressful and kind of depressing when you are a festival programmer.
Yeah, am I right, Mr. Robinson?
Really try and avoid saying we must have a certain number. Mm. We really do try.
But it's true
and
that you work for LGBTQ plus festivals, so you have already a niche to look for.
But there are certain kinds of films it's harder to find, and I think Asian films have been harder for us to find, and it used to be harder for us to find trans films. But I just wanted to mention Wash Westmoreland's Colette, because he used a number of different trans actors in cisgendered roles, and I don't see why that shouldn't be absolutely the case. And it seems like there's a great nervousness. I mean, and the notion that all that a trans actor can do is play a trans character. I mean, and also this notion that there's a kind of, when you say trans, that you mean one thing.
Yeah.
And anyone who knows anything about the complexity of sexuality and identity and desire knows that it's a nonsense. I mean, there are as many different types of gays or lesbians or trans people as there are flowers in the forest.
Or different kinds of straight women and straight men.
Yeah, I mean, we don't say, oh, all straight women, think like this, and this is the, Scarlett Johansson is the straight woman, and everyone must be like her. She's getting a lot of mentions today. She's become like the Virgin Mary somehow, like the icon of womanhood. But I think that's, in diversity, if you get hung up on representation alone, and that you want everything from one representation, you're going to be disappointed. And I'm afraid the world is not perfect, and we can push and ask and beg and steal and try and change the world, but sometimes I wish people across the wider LGBTQ+ communities would choose their battles with care, because sometimes the people that are being attacked, it's on a kind of a linguistic basis or a question of interpretation. But actually, you should look at, the wider, where the battle lines are, who's actually on your side, who's done anything to support you. And so, yeah, we live in interesting times.
Yeah, very interesting. And I was wondering also about the fact that maybe what is called the globalization of festivals as well, because you know festivals are were a lot in the world. Now many are closing down, so there is like a restriction of the presence of festivals in the world, especially in Asia, for example. And we are, if you look at the big at the AA festivals, the kind of movies that go there are more or less the same. So there is this kind of tour of titles that go around, and probably more niche festivals are responsible to keep the lights on films that are not exactly mainstream or easy easy to watch. And I wanted to ask if to both Michelle and Brian if this is a feeling that only I have, or if it's really getting more and more difficult to find good and diverse and daring movies to put in your programs.
I have a specific view on this because I work once again in immersive storytelling and in VR, which is such a new art form that we are experiencing the exact opposite of what you're describing. We're experiencing an explosion that is spectacular of talent, new ways of telling stories, new formats. And so there is the exact opposite. I mean, VR presence is happening everywhere. It's like mushrooms after the rain, you know, now everywhere in the world, including in Asia and Africa. So it's... I used to work in flat film before, and it hey, was
you call them flat films.
Yeah, in VR we call flatties the flat films. So we and it's not derogatory. It's just the way because many producers and now directors make a flat film, and sometimes they make a VR film. So when they talk about a project, we ask them, "Well, are you talking about a flat film or a VR film?" And we're seeing this explosion of talent everywhere, you know, where the attendance of those events is growing. There are more and more people buying headsets, and it's starting to happen in a big way. And talents, directors, film directors who are transitioning to VR, are more and more... there are more and more of them, and they are more and more interested in playing, sometimes with VR and sometimes with flat. So I'm not seeing this at all that you're describing, and I am also seeing that the community in VR is incredibly diverse. The question of gender that you addressed a few days ago is almost non-existent. I mean, there are as many women as there are men. And we're seeing quite a number of queer films in VR. So I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's a small community that seems to be growing for the moment without the prejudices of of the film community. Just because it's such a smaller one for the moment and a younger one in terms of history. It's only been maybe 4 or 5 years, that we exist. So in VR, we're living an incredible moment where we're riding a wave, and that wave is growing, and it's exhilarating.
Well, that's really refreshing to hear, because in the flat world, it's not exactly as booming as you say. What do you think? Is it true that festival? I mean, I'm telling this because, as you know, I've worked in the LGBT festival for like 20 years. And you are too. So it was easier back in the days to be edgy, to find edgy films. I find it was easier to find good quality edgy movie to promote. Now everything is more industrialized, also in that area. So it's, or am I just rambling around in nonsense?
I think there was a moment in the 80s and 90s when everyone wanted edgy, that they discovered S&M and fetish sex.
I mean, edgy is in terms of artistical edgy, not like content not edgy. Not in that way.
But there is a serious point about what kind of films we want to make, what kind of films get funding, what are polite and acceptable, and you know, everyone has a different view of what edgy means. But I think you're right, is that people have their eye on success, so they're sometimes going to compromise their storytelling, and they don't want to frighten the horses or their mother. And so we have these strangely neutered, family-friendly films that I think are caught between stools, that I want films that will dare to show full frontal nudity, and that sex is a part of it, that the LGBT community are not just fluffy bunnies who inhabit romantic comedies. We're vibrant, real, sometimes dangerous, sometimes lovely people. And yeah, I don't want to see the dumbing down of films. And that's why I like, you know, films that kind of step out a little bit of the comfort zone.
But actually, sorry.
Yes, you can. I'll
go. Me ayudas? yo siento que lo más importante uno como artista,
I feel that the most important thing as an artist,
es trabajar con las historias propias, las historias personales.
Is talking about your personal story, personal.
Porque son las que uno conoce.
Because it's what you know.
Y al conocer la historia de uno, la historia propia, como lo que está más dentro de uno.
And since it's your story, you know what's inside of you.
Es mucho más, no sé si la palabra es fácil, pero el compromiso dramático con la historia.
The dramatic compromise. Compromise.
Es mucho más, en mi caso que yo hice mi primera película.
It's way more in my case and with my first film.
Yo soy gay y dije tengo que hablar del mundo gay.
I'm gay and I thought I had to talk about that world.
No podía hablar como en ese minuto como de otra historia, quería como.
I couldn't talk about another history, another thing, another topic.
Y finalmente es solo una historia más. Sí,
for me, just another story.
Sí, para mí es muy importante que nuestras películas sirvan para los jóvenes.
For me, it's very important that our films could be useful for young people.
Para que no tengan más miedo.
So that they don't are not afraid anymore.
Porque finalmente el miedo no sirve, o sea, no le sirve a nadie.
Because fear will be useless.
Y un poco de lo que estaban conversando, vivimos en un mundo donde siempre ha habido represiones siempre a las minorías de todo tipo.
We're living in a world where there's always been repression, there's always been minority, there's always
over minority.
Lo que más me preocupa hoy día,
the more the thing I'm the most worried about,
es que el mundo se está transformando nuevamente.
The world is transforming again.
Con presidentes de ultraderecha.
Con presidents of, you know, far right.
Y eso es como retroceder de alguna manera.
It's like going back.
Y eso no me asusta, pero sí.
I'm not scared, but.
Pero siento que es como el momento en que nuestras historias, por lo menos la mía, aparece en el minuto preciso para decirle al mundo.
I feel that my story, my film is appearing in the very right moment.
No quiero decir que tenemos que amarnos, no es como de cliché, una frase cliché, pero
I don't want to say that we must love ourselves,
pero sí importante es como poder entregar un discurso simple para que todo el mundo pueda escucharlo, entenderlo y recibirlo.
But it's important to start like a simple discussion so that everybody can receive that and understand it.
Well, thank you. Well, first, Amen. We are closing our little chat. I just wanted to say that Mr. Sebastian Munoz just won the Queer Lion Award here in Venice just today, like a couple of hours ago. So congratulations.
Congratulations.
We'll talk about more about this. Well, I think we throw on the plate on the table a lot of nice and interesting thoughts, hoping that next time, maybe in a year, we can talk again about this issue with new and more refreshing. No, I mean, not as refreshing as the VR word, Michelle, but maybe closer to that. So thank you very much to our guests. Thanks to Brian Robinson, Michelle Rayak, Isabel Sandoval, Sebastian Munoz for having been with us. I'm Angela Cerbi.
I'm Chiara Nicoletti.
And we say bye to you from Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.